and grace for grace. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Christ. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, He has declared Him. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 16. Fort Collins Radiator Shop reminds listeners the effects of child abuse are devastating. For those who survive, the pain inflicted upon them as children will often influence their entire lives. If you or someone you know needs help, contact your local authorities immediately. This message from Fort Collins Radiator Shop, 417 Jefferson Street in Fort Collins. For all your radiator repair needs, they have 47 years of experience, family owned and operated. Call 970-482-6783. That's 970-482-6783. Whether you're in automotive, sporting goods, hardware, health, wellness, electrical, electronics, construction, carpet cleaning, legal, or animal care, and offer exceptional customer service and provide quality services or goods, you're honest, reliable, and professional. If you have a business, we have the customers. Let us put you in touch with our loyal, supportive, and dedicated listeners today. They're waiting to hear from you. It's inexpensive. It's effective. Call KHNC at 1-800-205-6245.
Well, good morning, Dr. Stan here at the American Freedom Network, and of course coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Well, why don't we ordinarily get the truth? Well, so much goes on behind the scenes, and if you are a government employee, why, you certainly sign all sorts of agreements that you will never tell the public the truth. And as a result, the average American has very little idea of what the American government is really doing and what our policies really are throughout the world. Well, if there's nothing to conceal, why do they conceal it? Well, they have a great deal to conceal. And one of the major things we're concealing is that the major thrust of American policy has nothing to do with preserving America or freedom. It has to do with bringing about a world government. And we have our troops stationed all over the world, imposing that government and replacing legitimate governments and many times duly elected or democratically elected governments with men who go along with the agenda of what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. Well, with us this morning is Susan Lindauer, who has actually worked as a whistleblower, and she has an amazing story to tell. Susan, come right ahead and tell our listeners about yourself and about what happened after you tried to bring out the truth.
Hey there. I'm so glad to be on your show, and it's really extraordinary that the corporate media has blacked out my story so the people continue to be ignorant of the options that we faced before the Iraq War and also our advanced knowledge of 9/11. Because I, in fact, encompass both of those things. I was an anti-sanctions activist who was recruited by I have an extraordinary background. I was an anti-sanctions activist at the United Nations, and I was recruited by the U.S. side to establish a back channel to the Iraqi embassy at the United Nations. I did so with the full knowledge of the Iraqi diplomatic staff. In other words, my responsibility was my offering was not covert. I was genuinely an activist. I was truly always passionately committed to the anti-sanctions fight. The Iraqi sanctions were causing the deaths and suffering of tens of millions of people. 1.7 million Iraqis died. Literacy was wiped out in a generation. Iraq went from having the best healthcare system in the world, in the Arab world, certainly, performing the second heart transplant to a system that's so dilapidated and broken and ruined that it's like the worst of third world healthcare systems. It's really a horrific tragedy caused by the United Nations. So my concern was completely authentic, and they saw that. So I set up a back channel between Baghdad and the CIA throughout the Clinton years. And of course we all know that Clinton was very hard on the Iraqis, and that did not reduce the violence, however, the attacks, the military attacks. However, it may have stopped us from going into a full-scale war because it gave Iraq a vehicle, an opportunity, a channel, an avenue for communications. And my focus was terrorism. So that's how this whole thing gets started.
Okay, fine. And basically, of course, I think what people have to remember, and most people have forgotten, is that we put sanctions on Iraq following the first Gulf War, and basically as a result of that, an awful lot of they couldn't get health care, they couldn't get medicines, and as that, some people say that as many as 500,000 Iraqi children died.
Oh, no.
Well,
as many as a million.
Okay.
1 million died. 500,000 Iraqi children died as of the start of 1996.
Okay.
So that's like, see, no offense to you, but you see how the propaganda works. The corporate media reinforces the negative story to diminish the responsibility. And you are repeating what I've heard other people say, which is that it was only 500,000, but in fact only 500,000, quote unquote, which is tragic as you and I both agree, 500,000 had died by the end of 1995. The sanctions continued for another 8 years.
Okay, go right ahead.
Yeah, isn't that horrifying? And the CNN media, the MSNBC media, Fox News want to reassure Americans that really what we did to Baghdad was not as terrible as all that. It was atrocious. In reality, it was a horrific, violent thing. The Foreign Affairs Journal, the very prestigious Foreign Affairs Journal, the very conservative Foreign Affairs Journal, published an article in, I think it was 1997, saying that sanctions, United Nations sanctions, were the only weapon of mass destruction in Iraq at that time. That it was very unlikely, and this was the foreign policy, you know, this was the great foreign policy arm of the United States, the studious, scholarly, must read for all foreign policy experts. And they said that it was very unlikely that there were weapons of mass destruction because Iraq had been shut off from supplies since 1990, and that no weapons had been found. And, you know, anything that had been found early on had been destroyed. And so there was nothing. The only weapons of mass destruction were the sanctions. Now, what you hear now today are apologists trying to make excuses, rationalizers, trying to say, well, it was really Saddam. It wasn't our fault. It was not our fault that we thought we made the mistake of presuming that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That Saddam, he was so tricky. He kept telling us that there were, and he was trying to make himself look tough for Iran. Well, now I will tell you flat out, as an authority on this subject, that's a lie. Iraq repeatedly swore up and down that they had absolutely no weapons of mass destruction. There was never any posturing, pretending that they had weapons of mass destruction. That is a bullshit, excuse me, that is a lie. That is an absolute lie that was created to pacify the peace movement, the anti-war community, so that we would not pay attention. And we'd say, oh, well, it's not our fault that we made the mistake. It's Saddam's fault.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment. Susan.
Great Plains Power has been providing reliable electrical power systems in the Rocky Mountain area since 1992. Our systems rely on the sun to help make you self-reliant for your power needs. Solar energy can be scaled to fit any situation, from complete power independence to backup power for the short term. Our expertise focuses on standalone power, but we have extensive experience with utility interactive systems as well. Custom tailored capabilities as modest as emergency lighting all the way to commercial scale power. Great Plains Power is a full service company. We service everything we sell. We provide and design turnkey packages, custom design system, and parts for do-it-yourself. With more than 20 years of specialized experience at your disposal, let us know what your power concerns or goals are. Reach us by phone or the internet. Call 303-239-9963. That's 303-239-9963. Or go to greatplainssolar.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
Is it me, or have you noticed that personal service is becoming a thing of the past? Is a big store with untrained personnel, or going to a vitamin store and finding several brands of the same herbal product, all at different prices? You don't need to be an herbal expert at the Green Herb. We'll gladly help you decide which of the Green Herb's exclusive products will work for you and work better than anything you buy elsewhere. And we'll give you an old-fashioned money-back guarantee. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, or go to our website at www.thegreenherb.com. It's the Green Herb's policy to give you small-town service in the big city, and be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
Well, and here I guess, I was working for our government and behind the scenes, and then of course eventually she came out to tell the truth about what really happened concerning the invasion of Iraq under George Bush. And you know, when one child dies, why, that's a tragedy. And certainly when 20 children died there at Sandy Hook School and in Connecticut, why, we heard about this day after day after day, and a million or a million and a half Iraqi children died, totally ignored, totally ignored. It's just a statistic. Now, one of the key things that you have brought out is the fact that certainly George Bush was threatened to invade Iraq, and Saddam Hussein agreed to resign and just simply leave the country, or at least go someplace.
No, well, not leave the country, no.
Okay, fine. Well, you give the story.
Oh, okay. Well, here's the thing. Americans, the reason I apologize for swearing in the first segment. I get very passionate about these issues because your audience is very concerned about the dignity of foreign policy, and I admire you so much for that, Dr. Stan. And I know that you care very much for, you know, for the morality of foreign policy. But most Americans have been, and I hope your audience is already aware of these issues too. However, most Americans have been apparently surprised. They've been baffled why the Iraqi people hated us so much when we bombed them. And that why the Iraqi people were so angry, and why did they fight back? They had a complete false expectation of who we are in the Middle East, because of the ignorance of the damage that we had already inflicted from sanctions. So that's why I wanted to give you this precursor as to what was going on at the time, that why I got involved, and how nobody would, as you can tell, nobody would ever have mistaken me for supporting sanctions on Iraq. And this is why the Iraqi diplomats were willing to deal with me, because I was so passionately outspoken against this cause at the UN level. But what we did, what happened was, my forte was, in fact, anti-terrorism, but real terrorism, not the kind that's manufactured by the FBI, which you see constantly now. Most of the plots that are uncovered are actually created by the FBI. The FBI goes online and recruits disaffected young men, mostly very often very unstable men, like 18 to 21-year-olds who not often, but sometimes do not even show up for the bombing. Like, they'll get on the internet and they'll chat. They'll get into a chat room and they'll have a couple of meetings. They'll try to recruit somebody for a couple of meetings. And they're in point of fact, there are times when the FBI recruits somebody, and then the guy doesn't even, you know, just like has a couple of coffee meetings, and they spout their anti-U.S. rhetoric or whatever, and they talk tough and big, and then when the day comes, they don't even show up to carry out the attack. The FBI is waiting for them to go, and they're like, I don't want to be involved with you, because in fact, that's kind of how jihadi circles work. True jihadis. I met somebody in Minnesota who said that she had contact with someone who may have been. Well, it's a 9/11 story. The point is that a lot of terrorists are not really that enthusiastic. It often happens that a jihadi will literally strap a bomb to someone with duct tape and send them off to be a suicide bomber on the threat of hurting their family. So the real ones who are the really, quote, motivated people are often blackmailing others to do their work for them. I don't think that most Americans even understand that. That these guys, they don't necessarily want to participate in terrorist attacks, but they're threatened, they feel threatened, so they have to appear to go along with it. And in Middle East circles, in actual Arab circles, like in Saudi Arabia or Iraq or Jordan or, you know, wherever, these are not the motivated people, because they're too self-important to sacrifice. If I'm so narcissistic that I'm going to organize a suicide bomb, I don't want to kill myself because I'm necessary to the cause. I want to go kill somebody. I want somebody else to go who is worthless, who's less than me, to go do the job for me. So what you see is that a real terrorist will get off the plane. Seriously, they'll take the bomb onto the plane, and the bomb will be scheduled to go off at 2 o'clock as the flight, you know, there will be a stopover. Let's just say they get on in Zurich, and they're heading to London. There will be a stopover in Paris, and the terrorist will walk off the plane with his wife. Or sometimes he'll leave his wife behind. Okay. Sometimes he leaves his wife and his kids behind, but he'll get off the plane and leave. Say, oh, I've got to go back. And then he'll leave the luggage on the plane that's going to blow up. And then, boom, everybody presumes the terrorist is dead. But in fact, he got off the plane. See, these guys are cowards. These guys are, you know, so frequently they recruit people, not because they're devout, but because they're threatened, they're extorted, they threaten to kill the children. Like, if you don't do this for me, I'm going to kill your wife and children, or I'm going to pay you but if you do it for me, then I'll give you $50,000. So you have a choice. I'm either going to kill your wife and children, or you're going to do this for me, and I'm going to give $50,000 to your widow. And so they feel forced into it. And these are very powerless people. So when the FBI comes along, the FBI is doing, in their minds, psychologically, very much what the jihadis are doing. The FBI puts up a fake recruiter, and these people are often very much intimidated, and they go along with it. And often they don't even show up for the fight. They don't even show up on the day. And the FBI goes and arrests them from their house. And they're like, but I never even showed up. And it doesn't matter because you're in a conspiracy because you had the conversation. But then when they get into court and the judge hears this and says, you mean to tell me that this guy sat in a coffee house and you talked about this, but then on the day of the event, the guy hides. Well, that says a lot. And so Americans, again, we don't understand the psychology of terrorism. It is to terrorize absolutely everybody.
And they're playing games with our mind, and a lot of this is coordinated by the FBI. They want to convince us that there's a war on terrorism. They have these extensive units at every airport in the country, and we are searched when we go in there. And how many terrorists have they found? I don't think they found any, but they have to keep...
The only one that they found was actually recruited by the FBI.
Well,
the underwear bomber was recruited by the FBI and trained and put up to do it.
Well, but look,
and he did get on the plane with an underwear bomb. He did, he tried to get on a plane with an underwear bomb. But you see that it is just so rare, and it is completely unnecessary to go to these extreme lengths. They're taking away your shampoo and hairspray. It drives me crazy to go to the airport. I get really upset. I'm like, this is you, TSA, you're having, it's a jobs program. It's creating no extra benefit of security for anybody.
Well, so, let's get a little bit into Saddam Hussein. What did Saddam do when he heard that George Bush wanted to invade Iraq?
Well, this was even before. This was, by the end of the Clinton administration, the weapons inspectors were thrown out in December of 98. By the end of the Clinton administration in October, November of 2000, which is now 2 years later, the Iraqis were saying, okay, let's get the weapons inspectors back in and let's make the sanctions go away. Now, here was a very important thing that was happening. The momentum was on the side of Baghdad. International, while the United States was completely ignorant and narcissistic and feeding itself this isolated propaganda, we're like a bubble and we're feeding ourselves propaganda, but outside in Europe and outside in the Middle East, everybody has a much greater dialogue and they have a much greater closer contact with the events. So they knew what was going on, but we didn't. And what had happened was in Europe, two German pilots had started running the blockade that the air embargo imposed on the Iraqi government, the no-fly zone. And they were challenging the no-fly zone, carrying humanitarian supplies, medicine, doctors, nurses, to help the Iraqi people, save the Iraqi people. And when the CIA saw this, and these were ordinary people who are nameless, they stood up for their values, and they were like, we refuse to kill children. These people are dying in our name. We're not going to tolerate it. We're small. We're going to do something about it. When the CIA saw that, they knew that all the governments were not going to be – all it was over. All the moral authority that had the delusion of moral authority had collapsed into a vacuum. And now the CIA recognized that they had to get in front of the issue and take back control, so the United States would maintain power and authority and domination of Baghdad, of global relations with Iraq in a post-sanctions Iraq. That we could see the sanctions were going to fall. Now the question was getting the United States into a position so that we would not be punished for the 13 years of sanctions. Okay, so the Iraqis, shock surprisingly, the Iraqis were so desperate to get rid of the sanctions that they agreed to this, and they were quite willing to give the United States every possible thing they could to end the sanctions. And here's what they offered. The discussion started in November of 2000, and over the next 2 years, from November of 2000 until January of 2003, I delivered 11 briefing papers to the White House, and this marked the transition of power, the evolution of dialogue. Okay, the evolution of dialogue, and so that's what was happening. And here's what the Iraqis offered that has been hidden from the corporate media. They offered first of all, are we about to go to a break?
I'll let you know. Hear a little music. We've got about a minute now. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll tell you this after the. I think that let me just set it up. I'd rather tell you the outline of the thing in one swoop rather than having a break.
All right. And well, so, we've got about a minute before we go to the go to the mid-hour break. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Well, here's what you need to know. All through the time that the United States people and the world community was being told that Saddam opposed weapons inspections and that he was fighting against weapons inspections, all through that time, Saddam was, in fact, hoping to get them back into play. And all that time, he kept saying, we don't have any weapons of mass destruction. We have nothing. There's, you know, you've taken it all. And I used to joke with the Iraqi diplomats. I have a very dark sense of humor. And I used to say, hey, what we need to do is you guys need to buy some weapons from Iran, which was Iraq's mortal enemy. And you need to ship the weapons into Syria, which was another, you know, Saddam and Assad were not on the best of terms. And you, because Saddam was a Sunni and Assad was a Shiite. And so at that time, you know, Iraq was in a good position to counter the Shiite influence in Iran, in Syria.
Hold the thought. We'll be back in just about 3 minutes.
The name is Patriot Trading Group, and the website is allamericangold.com. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President of the Patriot Trading Group, and we handle American gold for the American people because that's who we are and that's who we care about. So if you want your portfolio to help you get the job done, or if you want your IRA to be safe from Wall Street and the paper markets and your kids' future to be protected, then call us, the Patriot Trading Group, at 800-951-0592. You'll be glad you did.
If catastrophe struck, would your family be prepared? Are you confident you wouldn't react in a panic? Is there one place to get all of your emergency supplies? Ferris Survival encourages you to have confidence through preparation, not panic through crisis. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing quality, realistic preparedness supplies at an affordable price. Go online, stop by, or call 303-781-0343. Ferris Survival.
At Ram, we only build trucks. That's why there's only one true truck month. So it's no surprise that the new Ram 1500 has been named the 2013 Motor Trend Truck of the Year and the 2013 North American Truck of the Year. It features an available Torque Flight 8-speed transmission that achieves best-in-class 25 mpg highway and a 100,000-mile 5-year powertrain warranty. Come see the new Ram 1500 at the only true truck month, Ram. Trade in your vehicle and get $7,700 in total values on Ram 1500 Bighorn Crew Cab 4x4 equipped with a Hemi V8 engine. Standard pickup class, EPA estimated V6 4x2. See dealer for details and a copy of limited warranty. Values include $4,500 total cash allowances and $3,200 Bighorn package discount. Package values based on combined value of individual package items. Trade in vehicle must be registered to qualified buyer for at least 30 days. Residency restrictions apply. Offer ends 4/1. Ram and Hemi are registered trademarks of Chrysler Group LLC.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. This is the America News Network.
He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him. But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 10 through 13.
And I guess this morning Susan Lindauer, who of course had been working with our intelligence agencies, and basically, of course, the thing that people don't understand is that Iraq was willing to make all sorts of concessions, as was certainly Saddam Hussein. The last thing they wanted was a war with the United States. But you see, George Bush was intent upon a war, and he lied to the American people about the weapons of mass destruction, and he knew he was lying because at that time, and you go back and read my newsletters that were written there in 2008, pardon me, in 2002, 2003, at that time, why, of course, certainly all of our intelligence agencies said Saddam Hussein doesn't have any weapons of mass destruction, but they wanted a war. And basically, people don't understand all of our wars are contrived, and the coming war with the Muslim world that is coming, I don't know how soon, but it's coming, why this is going to be a contrived war as well. And an awful lot of people are going to die unnecessarily. But Susan, you pick up the story about the Iraq war.
Yes. It's very, all of this, I hope you will listen to this carefully and understand the back story that I've given you on the suffering of the Iraqi children is something you should have known about before we ever fired a shot in Baghdad. There was never any chance that we could succeed and win the hearts and minds of the Arab street. That was never, it was impossible after the decade of suffering under sanctions. At the same time, it was another huge lie that Saddam Hussein was pretending to have weapons of mass destruction. In fact, the Iraqi diplomats denied it steadfastly. And I believed them. I was the person doing the direct talks with Iraq, the covert back talks, rather, with Iraq to reinstate the weapons inspections. And they would say things to me like, what's going to happen when the United States gets in there and they discover that they've been completely wrong? How are they going to save face? How are we going to get the giant out of its corner? We have to find a way that the United States can save face as it admits that it made this terrible mistake. When the Iraqi diplomats were saying this to me, I knew that Iraq would have no weapons of mass destruction at all. I knew it was true because they were so concerned about what was going to happen after what mechanisms would be in place to protect them so that the inspections could not go on indefinitely when the United States found no weapons. So here's what happened. In December of 2000, the ballots were being counted in Florida, before we even knew whether Al Gore or George Bush would win the election, I was already having meetings with the Iraqi ambassador in New York. As it happened, my cousin, Andrew Card, was named chief of staff to George Bush in December of 2000. So all of fate and all of history joined right at that point. And so it was that every single debriefing paper given to the White House was given to my CIA handler and to the chief of staff of George Bush. They were completely aware of every single detail. And there were 11 debriefings in all. 11 reports on the progress of talks. Okay. Now, from the beginning, the CIA already had, we'd already, through my back channel, we'd already felt out the Iraqis and we'd confirmed that the Iraqis were going to give us pretty much everything we wanted. The Iraq's ambassador to the United Nations, Dr. Saeed Hassan, told me in December of 2000, before the inauguration of Bush, that it would be a very short conversation because Iraq was already in agreement on all of the known points that the United States was demanding. In other words, based on what we had already told them we're going to ask for all these things. Are you interested? If we're going to have these talks, is there a chance of success? Iraq had already said yes. Okay. Now, here's what they were giving us. And as I tell you this, I hope you'll think about Julian Assange and poor Bradley Manning, whom I love. Bradley Manning, I feel like he's my little brother. And how truth tellers are being vilified. I myself was the second non-Arab American ever indicted on the Patriot Act. I was held under indictment for 5 years, secret charges, secret evidence, secret grand jury testimony. I was locked up in prison on Carswell Air Force Base for a year, threatened with forcible drugging of Haldol, Ativan, and Prozac, accused of incompetence to stand trial. And the reason was the Bush administration was terrified that you would learn what I'm about to tell you right now. And they went into the most violent effort that you could possibly imagine to conceal what I'm about to say to you. So it's very serious that they did it. They took it very seriously. And I want you to know that if only I'd had a Julian Assange. A lot of people don't like WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks. We need people like me who are spooky people depend on a Julian Assange type figure who is knowledgeable about how to work the intermedia and how to get work through the internet to get information to the public. I had many skills, but public disclosure was definitely not one of them. And if you'd had what I know, had the facts of what I'm about to tell you right now, all of history would have been different. So here's what Bush was hiding from you. And if you'd known, we could have stopped the war from starting. We could have impeached Bush. We could have thrown him out after the first election, so he never was reelected. And this is what was the stakes. Okay. From the end of the Clinton administration, Saddam Hussein offered weapons inspections. He always wanted to get them in. We always refused. It was our side that was dragging our heels, which was an indication that we knew Saddam was telling the truth, that we knew there would be no weapons to find. But that's not all Iraq was offering us. Iraq, my background was in anti-terrorism. So I was looking at protocols and a structure for how to handle terrorism in Iraq. How to get Iraq's maximum cooperation with terrorism before 9/11. Okay. So as of February 2001, Iraq agreed to invite the FBI to send a terrorism task force into Iraq with authorization to conduct terrorism investigations, interview witnesses, and make arrests. This was a practical step for maximizing cooperation. That does not mean that Saddam Hussein was going to back away from his support of the Palestinians. This was the one particular issue that he was never going to relent on. He believed that Palestinian fighters were jihadis defending their homeland against Israel. They would have been off limits. But true terrorists, like those who had organized the bombing of the USS Cole, who were tied to Al-Qaeda, Saddam Hussein wanted to get rid of those people. There was one man, Zawari, I think was his name, and he ended up leading the resistance. Saddam tried to give him to us in March of 2002. We refused to take him.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Cintas, the uniformed people in Greeley, is saluting the police, firefighters, paramedics, and 9/11 dispatchers who work in our community. We thank them for doing a great job trying to keep our area a better place to live, shop, and raise a family. We realize their job is dangerous and sometimes thankless. This message from Cintas, the uniformed people in Greeley. They can be reached at 970-352-2233. On the air because they care. Named one of the most admired outsourcing companies in America. 970-352-2233. Cintas, the uniformed people.
Square Root Construction is pleased to help support the American Freedom Network by offering a high-quality custom deck construction services. Established in 1990, Square Root Construction has been building high-quality decks and other types of outdoor living projects all along the Northern Front Range. We are licensed, insured, and have all the experience, knowledge, and skills to help you create the outdoor living oasis of your dreams. For your free consultation and no-obligation quote, give Doug a call at 303-517-8742 or visit us on the web at squareroconstruction.com.
What? Good, clean, delicious water that's alkaline high pH that I can make in my own home? And I don't have to carry in all those heavy bottles or taste the water. You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. With a Kangen water machine at your fingertips, you and your family can have clean, delicious, ionized, alkaline high pH Kangen water. And so much more. Change your water, change your life. Call Rebecca Starnes at 720-209-9017. Again, 720-209-9017.
The name is Patriot Trading Group, and the website is allamericangold.com. I'm Joe Jaquin, Vice President of the Patriot Trading Group, and we handle American gold for the American people because that's who we are and that's who we care about. So if you want your portfolio to help you get the job done, or if you want your IRA to be safe from Wall Street and the paper markets and your kids' future to be protected, then call us, the Patriot Trading Group, at 800-951-0592. You'll be glad you did.
Well, Dr. Stan, I guess this is Linda or Susan. Pick up the story.
Well, okay, so here are two areas.
Susan is there.
First of all,
go ahead.
The weapons of mass destruction, Iraq wanted to get the weapons inspectors in from the end of the Clinton administration. For the next 2 years, the United States stalled, the United Nations stalled, but this was a done deal. Okay, that was a lie that they told you. The other thing was terrorism. If you were really concerned about national security and getting Iraq's cooperation, Saddam Hussein was genuinely concerned that jihadis would take advantage of the sanctions and the dire poverty and suffering of his people to try to destabilize his secular government and impose an Islamic state that would be, because religion is a comfort to people in times of great poverty. And so, he was very afraid of those people. He was more concerned about this than Dick Cheney. He tried to give us real terrorists, genuine, authentic terrorists, not manufactured terrorists by the FBI, but he tried to figure out a way to help turn them over to us. We had a great strategy, which was to let the FBI go into Baghdad with authorization to round these guys up. Saddam's government, a year before the invasion, tried to give us, a man who, Zawahiri, it's so long ago, a man who led the opposition, the insurgency, to the U.S. occupation. And the irony was is that Saddam identified him as a real dangerous man, and the U.S. refused to accept him. He said, this is a man who belongs in Guantanamo. He really does. He's the real thing, not like your fake ones. He's real. We refuse to take him. Thirdly, the Iraqis offered the United States preferential contracts in rebuilding Iraq. In backdoor channels, they said if the United States would give up the sanctions, the United States would have the right to have preferential contracts in oil production, oil development, and the reconstruction of Iraq's degraded oil infrastructure, its pumping stations, its pipeline. This would have meant jobs in an area that the United States is still good at. We still produce this stuff. We still manufacture it. And the United States oil equipment would have been it would have been a huge market for the United States. That's one thing. But they didn't stop there. Healthcare had been wiped out by the sanctions. Iraq offered the United States preferential contracts in rebuilding its hospital network. This would have been hospital construction, equipment purchases, hospital equipment purchases, and medicine, pharmaceutical supplies for doctors. This would have been a huge market for the United States. And again, the United States would have dominated the reconstruction of Iraq's healthcare industry. Thirdly, telecommunications. The Iraqis offered the United States preferential contracts in telecommunications, satellite technology, internet, phones, satellite phones, cable television, any kind of TV, like equipment. The United States would have been able to dominate the Iraqi market. Now, from the CIA perspective, that's a ka-ching, 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 because if you're going to dominate their market, we could spy on the Iraqis all we wanted. I have to tell you, the reason for telecommunications is so you can spy on these people. So you can control what information they have. You can control their news. Iraq was just bending over for us. And finally, the coup de grace. the Iraqis offered to purchase 1 million American-manufactured automobiles every year for 10 years. When I was told this, that would have meant thousands of jobs, auto supply parts, thousands of jobs in the Rust Belt of the United States. You wouldn't have needed a bailout of General Motors because it would have been, you know, the Iraqi fleet of cars, by the time sanctions had come into play, sanctions had been in place since 1990, so most of the cars on the streets were from the 80s. Cars were 15 years old. They had the entire civilian car force had to be replaced, and this was going to happen. So, you know, this was all going to, the United States was prepped for maximum profits and revenues. Anything that we wanted, the Iraqis were willing to give us. And everyone says, well, what about democracy? I bet Saddam hated democracy. Not really. No. You're wrong again. Saddam Hussein was a survivor. And he recognized that really the country, he floated an idea, one year before the invasion on my trip to Iraq. I had lunch at the Iraqi Hunting Club, which was a spy place. It was actually quite fun. And it was like very elite. They'd cleared it out for us. And I was having a meeting with a man called His Excellency. Now, I did not know the name of this man, but I'd seen him in video with Saddam Hussein at the Revolutionary Council meetings. And he would be standing behind Saddam, putting papers down for Saddam to sign, taking things away. He was like a secretary for Saddam, he looked like, because he carried papers around for Saddam to sign and stood right behind him. Very handsome man. He was later hanged. He was just a few months ago, he was hanged. And I have to tell you, I'm ashamed of the United States because these were good people. They're nothing at all like what you said they were. Like what we, the phony story we created that these were monstrous individuals, that's a lie. That's an outright lie. It's an unworthy lie. It's like saying Bashar Assad is a monster. That's not true. You know, Hafez al-Assad was a monster, and we didn't ever go after him. We cut deals with him. But Bashar Assad, no. No, you're wrong. You're completely inaccurate. And Saddam Hussein, again, completely inaccurate. All of its propaganda, invention, fabrications, not at all. He was a tough man, a very powerful and tough man, but he was a huge supporter of women's rights, education for his people. The problem with Saddam Hussein was he was a strong man. We don't like people to be strong because we want them to be weak.
Hang on there for just a minute. And I think the important thing is that Saddam agreed to actually resign. And he was willing to resign. American people were never told. They had to have an excuse for
it. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution.
And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness of him and cried out, saying, This was he of whom I said, He who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. The Gospel of John, chapter 1, verse 14 and 15. The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245.
Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom, good Sabbath. Revolution NMR LLC reminds listeners to honor our military members. Without their courage, we would be unable to enjoy the freedoms granted to us in the Constitution. Let's salute those who have given their lives in the line of duty, as well as those who serve today. Show your appreciation by sending a care package to our troops. Contact your local veterans organization for more information. This reminder has been from Revolution NMR LLC in Fort Collins, creator of Scientific Instruments.
Well, Dr. Stan here, I guess this is end our season. This is around time. So do you have a website to get more information?
I apologize for that dog, my dog's barking. My website is www.extremeprejudiceusa.wordpress.com.
One more time.
Shush! ExtremePrejudiceUSA.wordpress.com, and I apologize for that. I wanted to just conclude by saying that Saddam Hussein was willing to resign, was willing to stand down and retire to a villa in the country with a small contingent of what they call Revolutionary Guard to watch over him. He compared it to President Clinton having Secret Service protection. And he, the man assured me that Saddam might not even be around. They wanted to invite the Iraqi exiles to return to Baghdad and stay at expanded embassy compounds, which are sovereign territory of the home country, protected by embassy security. They would have had the rights to travel to campaign events, organize opposition campaign headquarters, and within 18 months there would have been free elections in Iraq.
Susan,
free elections. By December of 93, it would have been a done deal, and there would have been a smooth, orderly transition. Saddam Hussein never demanded $1 billion to step aside. He just wanted to retire and live out his life inside the country. He would never have left Iraq. He would never have gone to Europe or anything like that, but he would have just lived in the country, minding his own business, happily retired. He was a survivor, and the Bush administration knew this. They knew very well that there was no reason to go to war.
There was no reason to go to war, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, a lot of this you can read in my newsletters. I knew this at the time, but this was carefully suppressed from the American people. They wanted an excuse for war, ladies and gentlemen. They wanted an excuse for war, and they arrested Susan and put her in prison to keep this story from getting out. God bless you. I'm looking forward to having you in one of our other programs real soon. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the time I have to remind you my ministry's Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help to maintain our network of stations across America. You can hear us at RadioLiberty.com on the Internet, certainly 24 hours a day. That's RadioLiberty.com. We do 5 hours of live radio a day. We have certainly our programs are available, the archive programs. You can hear them. You can hear this on satellite, shortwave, but at RadioLiberty.com, you want to get information on my ministry. If you're in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'd love to have you. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. And you can go back and you can read my newsletters I wrote there during the 2001, 2002, 2003, that time period. I did a whole series on Iraq. And what Susan says is absolutely true. Saddam Hussein offered just to go into exile. But, of course, we didn't want that. They wanted a war so they could kill a lot of people. They wanted a war so a lot of Americans would die. A great diversion. And basically, of course, we wanted to dominate the oil in that area. And then, of course, we wanted, of course, to destroy Christianity. That's what we've done. We've destroyed Christianity. We've installed Sharia law in Iraq. American foreign policy. Hatred. And so until tomorrow at this same time, may the Lord be with you.
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Article 1, Section 10.
Now this is the testimony of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not. Are you the prophet?" And he answered, "No."